further review, does he still go first?
Petition for further review?
Yeah, we have a petition for further review.
Okay, you would normally go first.
Great, thank you.
Well, I would prefer to hear what he had to say. Wanted to keep with protocol.
Okay, let's give the chief a minute to get out. For the record, the case that's been called is Thunderman versus Hy-Vee. The case is before us on a petition for further review. Party seeking further review will present first. Thank you.
Again, I'm Raymond Walden for Hy-Vee and for Sweetbriar 2 LLC.
Thank you.
Which I should mention first, if it please the court. Sweetbriar is just the owner of the ground. They leased the ground to Hy-Vee, who put up all the structures, did all the design and everything else. The way that the case went through the district court, there was really no need to separately talk about Sweetbriar because the entire case, went. But Sweetbriar should be out. There's no evidence that by leasing the ground, it had anything to do with designing or maintaining this property.
But there was no motion for summary judgment on that basis presented to the district court. On behalf of the landowner.
No, there's no motion for summary judgment specifically about Sweetbriar. It was addressed to the, really to the whole thing, but that includes, was there evidence of, to hold Sweetbriar liable on any basis, and there's not. I just want to put that out there. Otherwise, the core of this case is somebody's foot slipped on a brake. He was trying to stop. He actually saw a car behind him. Probably shouldn't have started back before really, checking the rearview mirror, but he started back. Oh, there's a car back at the air pump. Mr. Swanson in his pickup was parked there coming off a shift. He'd worked there at the Hy-Vee convenience store for some years. Knew that people, would park out there in the traffic lane to use the air pump. Sees the car, goes through the brake, slips, hit the gas, roars backward into Mrs. Sunderman, who is crouched. I mean, it's probably why you didn't see her, because she's crouched at the, at her car, on that side of her car.
Her car was in the driving lane of a driveway into the convenience store area, correct?
That's right. There was another space that was, adjacent to the, around the corner, adjacent to the air pump.
And was her car facing westbound in what would be the eastbound entry lane of the drive?
I think it was both ways. I don't think it was a one-way lane.
Is the driveway both to enter and exit the premises?
That's my understanding. I
haven't
heard it differently.
So is there an eastbound lane and a westbound lane?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, she was she was on the side that would be, on the side of the convenience store.
Okay.
So she was against that curb, and so this would be the people.
Would she be
coming,
facing oncoming traffic coming into the drive?
I'm not actually sure, come to think of it, because I've never seen that as part of what really happened here. I mean, what happened is this guy's foot slips, and he roars backward out of control. So that brings us into the whole tangle of your questions about restatement and so forth, except I don't think we really ought to get there at all to tinkering with those rules, because both under the breach of duty, as the AW has been adopted and applied through the years since, under the old proximate cause rules,
intervene. Did AW change our premises liability rules? The elements of a premises liability case?
No, it doesn't change the elements except for where you're looking at, is there a duty or is there a breach of duty? You've moved foreseeability off into breach of duty. Foreseeability remains part of proximate cause and intervening cause.
Counsel, is this a premises liability case?
It is. It's
did either the trial court or the Court of Appeals analyze this case through the elements that we've said apply in a premises liability case?
I believe that was briefed in the, you know, the Judge Wheelock, you know, you can see in his opinion which direction he went with it. I don't think he's violating any analytical requirements in looking at it as, you know, negligence. I mean, that's part of a premises liability case.
Does that
still have to be negligent?
Does the framework that has been set out for premises liability cases help our analysis in this case?
I don't think so, because we're still looking at foreseeability, you know, as it exists in its various, you know, modes, including like the no-duty determination that Judge Wheelock also, you know, made. That's based on it, you know, there's really no duty to foresee a total freak accident like this.
That's not quite what he said. I understood him to be saying that there's no duty to warn of open and obvious conditions on the land. And that's just black letter law, isn't it?
That's right.
Is there anything about, what is the condition on the land that we're talking about in this case? Focus us.
Well, they say it's too narrow of a space, you know, and that they knew that cars were parking along that curb to use the air pump.
Is there any evidence that Ms. Sunderman didn't know about that condition or would fail to recognize that?
No, she said she knew that she would be out in the traffic lane. I mean, she can see how far it is to those cars that are parked. They can see how much. And so the risk that's really raised, you know, by what's supposed to be a squeezed space is that there's not enough for cars to go past. Maybe there's going to be two of them at the same time. They might not see somebody crouched there and so forth. But Swanson saw there's a car back there, surmised, oh, somebody's using that. I'll wait. Foot slips. That's not really, I mean, even if you're wanting to adopt the scope of liability notion, that's not a risk that would make that negligent. It's the interaction of cars and people, yes, but this, I think the Court of Appeals went totally wrong when they said specific details don't matter. I mean, the court said in AW, specific details matter. And they're talking about the breach of duty element. And then the Court of Appeals says, oh, now we'll ignore how this actually happened. It involved, you know, a car and a person sharing the same space. I don't think that's, you know, how you properly analyze things, either under the breach of duty analysis, under AW, or proximate cause, intervening cause. There's a very...
How does intervening cause factor into this discussion?
Well, it's kind of, it's a design question, and they're saying you put people together too closely, that raises the risk of somebody coming by and not seeing her, of her not, you know, realizing it's a car going by, maybe stepping back. Those are the kind of risks from that situation. Somebody backing out and not seeing her. None of that's what happened. What happened is he sees her. He's acting appropriately and, oops, you know, roars backward.
Well, could that have been anticipated regardless of design?
There's where foreseeability comes in, and Judge Wheelock does a very good job of going through, you know, is the uncontrolled car scenario a foreseeable thing, and cites, you know, several cases, you know, that no, including a whole lot of gas stations or convenience stores. You know, where it heads if, you know, we lose this case, and depending on your ground for it, what's the difference between, you know, this space between, you know, a row of parked cars and a curb and a car in that space? And there's a row, you know, here's some parked cars. Here's some parked cars. The store's that way. People get out of their cars and they're walking to the store. And somebody, whether heedlessly or not, whether out of control, you know, oops, whether they see the person or not. Aren't we making every parking lot a jury question on design? Shouldn't you be separating those people? Shouldn't you be putting this activity somewhere else? It's all cars and people together in limited space. That's what this was, and I, you know, I think the court needs to be kind of heed what you know, what it said in the past about not, you know, being careful about not imposing excessive precautions, you know, requiring excessive precautions, you know, of you know, like landowners.
But those are often in the intersection cases, for example.
Well, Latzel, Court of Appeals totally ignored Latzel. I think Latzel is an excellent case. It's really closely conceptually on point, you know, with the cars coming this way, the car coming this way, they can't see each other because of the corn, and nonetheless they're both heedlessly speeding toward the intersection. Two ways of analyzing it, you know, in the concurrence and the majority going with the, you know, kind of old school, you know, as a procedural matter, assuming away breach of duty. So now how about intervening cause? Concurrent saying, well, here's how the whole thing works out under our new way of thinking, comes to exactly the same conclusion. It's not foreseeable, and the farmer's planting the corn, you know, up to the, not quite to the road, but to the ditch, aren't bound to foresee those people. They're entitled to rely on the, you know, kind of the reasonable care of other people, you know, there. I think that's what this case is. Entitled to rely on somebody not to come roaring at excessive, you know, a high speed out of a parking space, you know, into somebody, whether it's maybe 10 feet closer to, you know, up against the convenience store wall is where their expert said, well, move it over 10 feet. Our expert's the only one who reconstructed the accident, says that wouldn't have made any difference. You know, once the foot slips, he wouldn't have been able to get it under control before he hit her anyway, 10 feet farther on, might have been going even faster. So I'd ask that the court, you know, I guess not go there on the whole scope of liability thing, but also this isn't the case that, you know, that really presents whether you ought to go there with that, because under any way of analyzing it, foreseeability is even part of that scope of liability notion, and you should affirm the Judge Wheelock's, I think, well-reasoned order. Thank you.
Thank you. We went a little bit over there. Do you want to add another minute? Thank you.
Now.
Please.
I apologize, Mr. Walden. Thank you for clarifying that. Good morning. My name is Matt Lathrop. I am representing Rita Sunderman here on appeal. Thank you for having me. The issue in this case is whether this court will continue to adhere to its confusing and inconsistent jurisprudence regarding efficient intervening cause. Plaintiff or Sunderman would here answer the question no. Instead, this court should adopt the restatement third approach to scope of liability. The reasons for that are easy. They go to some of the questions that have already been asked in this case. The restatement approach will give clear instruction to our courts and especially to our juries, which right now do not have that instruction. And that instruction will be applicable in all cases, premises or otherwise, limiting any and all liability of a defendant only to those harms that result from the risks that made the defendant's conduct tortious in the first place.
What was the risk that made the defendant's conduct, that was alleged to have made the defendant's conduct tortious here?
In this case, Hy-Vee designed a parking or a air filling station location which required its customers to use that filling station in the entry or exit lanes of the parking lot, the driveway, required any user using that to bend down and turn his or her back to traffic in one direction. Traffic was coming from three directions at that location, surrendering her ability to look out for herself and to react to any emergencies that would arise.
Is there any evidence in our record that Ms. Sunderman failed to appreciate the risks?
In fact, the opposite is true.
She knew them.
She knew them.
And is that going, important in a negligence case?
It is, going back to your original question. If we have just a tort liability under the old rubric, the property owner, if it understands that its customers will fail to protect itself, even knowing the risk, the landowner can be found negligent for failing to take measures to protect the customer.
So I'm going to back up a little bit. Do you agree that this is a premises liability case?
Absolutely. It was pled as one.
So the elements under 8.26, the standard jury instruction,
yes, ma'am,
are the elements of negligence that guide our analysis here. Is that correct?
Failing your adoption of the restatement third, I agree.
Well, haven't we said, even after the AW decision, haven't we said that the elements set out in 8.26 are the elements that govern a premises liability case? We've not been fuzzy on that.
No, I don't, but I don't think that, again, the clarity that the restatement third provides us in analyzing these actions is what is attractive. But it was pled as a premise design case, and the original question was just, is that important to your analysis? It is. And
Do you think that either the trial court or the Court of Appeals properly analyzed duty under a premises liability case, or did they sort of step over it and go to breach?
I believe that Judge Wheelock's summary judgment skipped that element of the negligence case, which dealt with would a patron fail to protect himself or herself from the harm. That is a breach, and I don't think Judge Wheelock addressed, I went back through the opinion as you asked the question. He did not address that jury instruction elements, no.
What about the Court of Appeals?
The Court of Appeals, with the evidence that they had, looked at foreseeability of the actions, and I don't think that their opinion specifically addressed the elements, but their opinion did address the foreseeability of a patron's failure to protect herself under the circumstances.
Would you call it a narrow foreseeability analysis?
By which court?
By the Court of Appeals.
No, I think the Court of Appeals assessment or evaluation was broad, and I would argue properly so. So the first question that the court asked briefing to address was, is foreseeability inquiry in tort action focused narrowly on the specific harm or more broadly? Either under Nebraska's current body of law or under the restatement, it's a broad approach. We have plenty of case law that says that the trier of fact does not look with precision in forecasting the exact hazard or consequence. And obviously Section 3 of the Restatement 3rd, which I'm imploring this court, if it should adopt the Restatement 3rd, to give direction to the trial courts to use these restatement sections as new jury instructions, because that's part of the confusion that reigns in trials with the hybrid system we have. Section 3 says a person acts negligently if the person does not exercise reasonable care under all the facts and circumstances. Foreseeability is a primary factor to consider. The jury considers the likelihood that the conduct here of Hy-Vee will result in harm. That's the foreseeability on breach, or the foreseeability that the severity of any harm that may ensue. And finally, step three of that, or the third consideration, is the burden of precautions to eliminate or reduce the risk of harm. Whether we apply the old foreseeability standards to Nebraska law, which is a broad, we don't have to have precise ability to forecast or foresee, or we use the restatement section three, we come to the same result. And that is a broad interpretation of foreseeability when we analyze the conduct of the tortfeasor. And again, this is about Hy-Vee's conduct. We want, and Hy-Vee would try to refocus this court's attention on Mr. Swanson's behavior, but this is about Hy-Vee and the foreseeable risk when they designed this parking lot and put this air filling station where it did.
Is there any way to design a parking lot to eliminate the risk that a backing vehicle will strike another vehicle or a pedestrian?
They've done it already.
How?
As you've heard in the evidence, they or you see when you read the evidence, they moved the pump to the south side of the filling station away from stalls except those parallel to it. So the air filling station is here and cars fill up here, cars back out. There's no, there are no places where cars will park and back into the area where the air compressor station is now.
The vehicles that were backing were about 25 feet away from where a vehicle would stop to air up.
From the curb. If
the back
that makes
of the
sense.
Vehicle. Mm-hmm.
The width of the car brings them much closer to the backing vehicle.
So we're talking about an entrance, a drive entrance, correct?
Yes,
and
two
it was
lanes.
Roughly 25 feet wide.
Correct.
Because it expected incoming vehicles to be to the right and exiting vehicles to be in the other lane.
Yes, and again, by the placement of the air compressor where they put it and expecting people to be using the air compressor in that location, which even their own design person and their own expert said was a reasonable use of their air compressor.
There were really two, one place that a person could pull into a stall and use the air compressor, isn't that right?
There was.
Right in front of the building.
Just a parking stall. It was not a designated stall for use of the air compressor.
It didn't say only air compressor patrons park here.
Correct.
But it was a stall right in front of the air compressor, and the air compressor actually faced that stall and not the curb, correct?
The box that the air compressor, to indicate air, faced, the hose itself was on a reel that faced the curb. So when you pull the reel out, you're walking towards the curb with the reel. And again, Everyone in this case that was asked indicated that they felt it was a reasonable use under the circumstances to use the air compressor there, and there was nothing special about the parking stall that could be used, which exposed a user to the danger of being squatted down next to your car, next to an empty space, a car pulling in and not seeing you because you're ducked down behind your car and you're crushed that way, or backs out because it doesn't see you bent down and crushes you that way. They did not provide any safe way to use this, and using it on the curb was a reasonable way to try to use it under the circumstances and taking the risks into consideration.
What do we make of the evidence in this case that your client appreciated the nature of the risk, if you will, that was presented by the location of this air pump?
This is a classic example of contributory negligence, which is why we ought to get rid of intervening cause anyway, because we've adopted contributory negligence. That's my client's contributory negligence, if any. If a jury were to decide that her decision to go under that risk try to exercise care, and whether she exercised care, that's the purpose of contributory negligence. The efficient intervening cause creates a problem because it uses a different standard to determine if someone was an efficient intervening cause. And the scope of liability instruction under the restatement third just clearly says a defendant is only held responsible for that conduct which makes, or the risks that ensue from what made the conduct negligent in the first place. What are we to make from Mrs. Sunderman's actions? She did what a reasonable person would do, as testified by all the experts in the case, and did the best she could to protect herself from a very dangerous situation that Hy-Vee created. We urge the court to adopt the third restatement, to affirm the Court of Appeals decision, and to remand this case for trial on the merits. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think we were out of time, is that right?
Correct.
Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you.